We're holding on Nun Bays on the Bays. Start over from the point, three lines from the end of the narrow lines in order to get to a complete topic over here. We started talking about, so the Mishnah told us about the concept of Drusa and mentioned a wolf in that connection. We had two ways of understanding Rav's opinion on the subject, where he says only Bebehemim and Azeev Lamaila, which leads to two possible different ways of understanding the Mishnah. First of all, whether one part of it is whether a cat is able to do Drusa, which we established that Rav is saying that ordinarily it can't, with the exception of young animals, which is what Rafitha is going to talk about now. But it also, according to Rashi, there's not really much of a nafka minna between the two different explanations of Rav, but according to most other Rishonim, it comes out the question, would we say, after all, that a wolf is able to cause Drusa in a large animal or only in a small one? Okay. Anyway, Amar of Chista, Drusas chosul n'miya b'gdoyim utloyim, the Drusa of a cat or of a marten, a little weasel-like creature, when it comes to young goats or young sheep, is significant. In other words, of a cat or of a marten.
Yeah.
So with larger animals, rabbits, a marten is a little weasel-like, a little creature. I think it's related to a mink or something. Whatever, it's some little rodent, like, not rodent quite, like whatever, some kind of little predator like that. Hello. Anyway, so okay, yeah, we just started. Okay, so yeah, so Rav Chista is telling us that even though Rav had said before that cats can't accomplish drissa in an animal, that only refers to a full-grown animal of any species. But if you're talking about baby sheep or baby goats, then yes. And drissa's cholda ba'oifus, and when it comes to birds, a cholda, which is also a weasel or a rat or some little ferret or some little creature like that, is capable of causing drissa. The Gemara says, "Maybe I have a contradiction because the Braita says drusas chosol meitzu nemiya. When it comes to drisa, when it comes to an attack by a cat or by a hawk or by a marten, it's not really considered drisa ad shichnokiv l'cholol unless it punctures all the way into the body cavity of the animal. Which, therefore, in other words, according to Rashi, the point is, in other words, we treat its claws like any foreign body. We're not worried about this eres, about this toxin or whatever that they inject with their claws." It's just strictly a matter of mechanical puncture. If an internal organ that is trait for the puncture was punctured, then that's that. According to the Rambam, it's somewhat different. We would say that, but also if it was an internal organ that in and of itself a puncture wouldn't make trait, for example, the liver, but there was evidence of drisa on that organ, then yes, it would be trait anyway. The point is, though, Abel drusa leslo, who is the just plain drusa, doesn't apply to these creatures that the Braita is telling us, only if they actually puncture all the way to the inside of the animal. So what are you telling me, Rav Chista, that a cat or a marten are able to cause drusa with small animals? So the Gemara answers back to Kisper and Netzlo Doris. So what are you thinking? You who are asking the question, you think that a hawk is not able to do drusa? On the face of it, because you're saying, Braita mentions a hawk. No, Vatsanan or Drusas Anate. Our Mishnah had mentioned that if a hawk, that if an animal or a bird, whatever, was attacked by a nate, by a hawk, then you have a problem with Drusa. So already you see that there's something wrong with the Braisa. Okay, the answer is the Braisa mentions that a nate does not in and of itself cause Drusa, unless it punctures all the way inside. The Mishnah had said Drusas Anate, that a hawk is capable of causing Drusa.
So it's a wrong Braisa?
That's the implication.
However,
the Gemara says, no, hold on, Kasha, that's not such a question, because the Braisa and the Mishnah are talking about two different cases. Kan ba'ofis, kan b'gdoyim utloyim. The Braisa is talking about birth. The Mishnah that says that a nate is capable of doing Jerusa would be referring to baby sheep and baby goats. So therefore,
a nate
is a hawk.
Oh.
Okay, makom makom l'rufchis. So fine. So that takes care of the matter. When it comes to birds, we would say the Braita is saying the attack of a nate doesn't in and of itself make them chafe unless it actually punctured all the way to the inside of the animal and then punctured a vital organ. As opposed to when it comes to going with loyim, then fine. Then Rav Chista is telling us that they're more susceptible to drisa, so therefore even the attack of a hawk.
Bird would be not susceptible to
not as much. I mean, it's obviously obviously the hawk is a predator. Obviously, if it rips it apart,
predator.
Again, if it rips it apart, and we're not talking about that. We're talking about that it clawed it or whatever that stuck its talons into it, are we concerned that the venom or bacteria or whatever it is that the hawk injects with its talons is enough to kill the animal, is enough to kill the bird? Not necessarily. So you could say that that's the difference.
That's
what we're talking about, Durissa, yeah. Which is that this exact point, in other words, that the claws or talons or what have you have been sunk into the, not, we're talking only a superficial wound, but nevertheless, they can cause an infection that eventually will, Okay. So that takes care of the braisa. Fine. We're still left with a question. But the question still is on Rav Chista, because Rav Chista had said that a cat or a marten can cause drusa in sheep, in baby sheep or baby goats. And the braisa is mentioning no, only if it punctures all the way to the inside. The answer is huda omaki hai tana. Now he goes according to a different tana. Now Tosfos explains that it looks like I got the distinction is actually backwards. Kan ba'ofis, kan b'goyim apoyim means the Mishnah is talking about birds that the attack of a nate would cause them to be treifa. The Braisa that says that nates is ad shetinok of l'chol is talking about sheep and goats. It's talking about baby sheep and baby goats. Baby goats and baby sheep, if a nace attacks them, they don't become treifa unless the puncture went all the way into the body cavity.
Fine.
The reason why I realize that is because Tosfos asked the question, when we say over here, Mekom Mokom Lo Rechista Kasha, if we say that there's still a question on Rechista, why doesn't Rechista answer the same thing? The Braita is talking about larger animals. And the answer is because since the Mishnah mentioned together a cat, a hawk and a marten, that implies the same rule applies to all three of them. If we just establish that the braisa is telling us that a hawk can't cause even baby sheep or goats to become treif, then the same must be, unless it punctures all the way to the inside, then the same must be true of a calf and of a marten. And yet Rav Chista is telling us that they are capable of causing drusa even without puncturing all the way to the inside. So what is it?
So it's not the right order.
No, not this. What do you mean, not the right order? Because the Mishnah mentions these three together, therefore the same rules must apply to all three. If we establish that the braisa means that a nate is not able to make a baby sheep or baby goat treif unless it punctures all the way to the inside, same must be true of a cat and of a marten, and yet Rav Chista is telling us that no, a cat or a marten are able to make. That's the contradiction between him and the braisa. That's why the braisa seems to contradict him. But the answer is huda amaki hai tana. The answer is that Rav Chista is following the opinion of a different tana, which he's entitled to do. The Tanya, as we learn in the Braisa, Beribi Omer, Beribi says, Rashi says that Beribi means Shem Chacham, is the name of a Talmud Chacham, and then he brings another explanation that Beribi means Gadol Hador, the great Talmud Chacham of his generation. Anyway, he says, we don't know. Anyway, Loi Omru, Ein Drusa Elu Mokam Shein Masilin. Beribi says that when do we say that these creatures are not able to cause Drusa unless they puncture all the way to the inside, Elu Mokam Shein Masilin, only when there's nobody trying to save the animal that's the victim, then that way it's not so angry. So therefore, it doesn't inject such an intense toxin that might be able to kill the animal. Avol b'makom sheyesh matzilin. But when you have somebody trying to save the victim, yesh drusa, then these animals would be able to do drusa because then they're very angry and therefore that makes the toxin, the poison, whatever that they inject, much stronger. So therefore, Rav Chista's case would be talking about, number one, it's a baby sheep or goat, so therefore it's weaker anyway, but number two, where somebody is trying to save it. So therefore, even a cat then is able to do drus on it. On the other hand, the braisa that says that they're not, is talking about where nobody is trying to save it. On the other hand, the braisa, so what it is not different cases, but rather Rav Chista is distinguishing, like Beribi does, whether somebody is trying to save the animal or not. Rav Chista's case is where somebody is trying to save it. The braisa, which doesn't make that distinction, would say that it doesn't matter. That doesn't matter. Either way, the cat is not able to accomplish drusa on an animal, even on a baby sheep or goat, unless it actually punctures all the way to the inside. Okay. So would go like Beribi. So the question is, well, Malcolm Shane Masilin and Drusa, you're telling me that when nobody is trying to save the animal or the bird that would be the would-be victim, you're telling me there's no Drusa? But we have the example of a chicken that was in the household of Rav Kahana, the Rohat Chosol Basra, a cat chased after it, but all the Idroina, the chicken ran into a room, the itchidash dosha ba'afe, the door slammed in the cat's face, so the cat wasn't able to get in. Umachya b'dosha b'sichufe, so the cat, in its anger, hit the door with its paw. The ishtaka haloch hamshakuti doma. And later on, they found five little things looking like drops of blood on the door, which represent the poison that the cat would have injected into this chicken if it had been able to catch it. So the point is, now nobody was trying to save that chicken, and yet we see that the cat would have produced enough toxin to kill it. The answer is hatsalas asmanami katsalas acherim dami. Sure, but in this case, the chicken saved itself by running into the room and the door slamming. So therefore, that's the equivalent of somebody trying to save it. In other words, when we say that the predator gets angry or not, we're not just talking whether there's another entity, another person or animal or whatever that's trying to save it. We're talking if there's anything opposing its attempt to attack this thing. Right. So Biribi can still follow his approach that there's a difference between Machtilin and Ein Machtilin, and that's not contradicted by the story. Okay, V'Rabbanon, whereas what would the Rabbanon, who disagree with Biribi, what would they say to that? They would say, okay, yeah, you have that case, but Zihar Islay, sure, we agree that in that case it produces a poison, but like Koli Zihare, however, it's poison, Zihare is poison, yeah. However, like Koli Zihare, however, this is poison, this toxin is not strong enough to be able to burn through the animal, the victim, and kill it by infection or whatever it is. Yes, in other words, we saw drops of blood over there, but if we were to actually take that stuff and inject it into a chicken, let's say it wouldn't necessarily kill it. Okay. So that's one way of understanding.
They experimented on that.
I don't know if they experimented, but the Chachamim figured that out. Okay. So that's one way of explaining Rav Chisda. He's not contradicted by the Braisa because he's talking according to Biribi and the Braisa is talking according to the Chachamim. Okay.
So the Allah has like the
Braisa. Well, wait. Ikadamri, another way of understanding the Braisa that we quoted that said that a cat or a hawk or a marten are not able to make the animal drusa unless they puncture all the way to the inside. We could say the other way around. Homani biribihi. We could say that Braisa also goes according to biribi. So just the opposite. Rav Chisda would be talking about a case regardless whether there's anybody trying to save the animal or not. Either way, Rav Chisda would say that a calf is able to make a baby sheep or a baby goat drusa. The reason why, so Hamani Biribi, the Braisa that we quoted that mentioned a cat, a hawk, or a marten would be according to Biribi. Titania, because we learned at a Braisa, because Biribi says that we only say that these animals are able to make an animal drusa only if somebody is trying to save the victim. But if somebody's not trying to save it, ain't drusa, then they're not able to make it drusa. So therefore, in other words, the Braisa that we quoted that said that a cat or a hawk or a marten are not able to make it drusa, that could be according to Biribi, and talking about when there's nobody trying to save the victim. Whereas Rav Chisda would be going, according to the Rabbanon, who don't make that distinction. The Rabbanon, we could say, the other way around. First, we thought to say that the Rabbanon who disagree with Biribi are more makel, that we would say that they're saying that regardless, a cat can never make an animal Jerusalem. Biribi is saying it depends whether the cat is angry or not, and the Chachamim would be saying either way not. But now we could say the other way around, that the Chachamim could be disagreeing with Biribi and saying, you're right, it doesn't matter, they're saying it doesn't matter whether the cat's angry or not, but in the other direction. Even if the cat's not angry, when we're talking about a baby animal, its poison, its toxin is still enough to be able to kill it.
How do you see that?
Because you can see that. In other words, we would be saying that Biribi, we would be saying the Braisa about the cat, the hawk, and the marten, Chosel Nesunamiya, is according to Biribi. It mentioned only that the animal is Treif Adjitinot of Lachol, but that would be talking about the case where nobody is trying to oppose it. The Braisa is not necessarily addressing the case where there's somebody opposing it, because we could say Britannia Biribi Omer, Loy Omer Yesh Drusa Alav Makam Sheyesh Matilin, Alav Makam Shein Matilin Ein Drusa. So therefore, when the Braisa says that, when the Braisa is saying Ein Drusa, fine, that's according to Biribi, when there's no Matilin. Whereas Rav Chisda, now Rav Chisda can't argue with the Braisa, but Rav Chisda can be following the opinion of the Chachamim who disagree with Biribi, with Biribi, who would be saying that always that a cat is able to make an animal drusa, but only when it's a baby animal. The Mishnah had mentioned a wolf, because when it comes to larger animals, you need at least something the size of a wolf to make them change. But baby animals, even a cat would be able to. Okay. And again, the question is, if we understand Biribi that way, so what are you telling me, that if there's nobody trying to save the animal, then there's no drusa? Again, the case, you have the chicken in Rav Kahana's household, the rot chosel basra, that a cat chased after it, and the chicken ran into a room, the itchid dosha ba'afe, and the door slammed in the cat's face, so the cat hit the door with its paw, the ishtaka halei chamisha kote jama, and they found that it had 5 droplets of blood. And again, the answer is, the reason why we're repeating this is because this was an ikad da'ami. This was a different version of the discussion from before. So you had in different yeshivas, they had different versions of how the discussion went, and therefore in both of them, they brought up this story of Rav Kahana's chicken.
What's the difference?
The first version is that Rav Chista is following Biribi, which means the halacha is not necessarily like him. The second version is that Rav Chista is going according to the Rabbanan, which means the halacha is like him. But therefore, we don't make a distinction in the end whether the predator is being opposed or not. Even if there's nobody opposing the cat or what have you, it can still inject a toxin powerful enough to kill the animal. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't depend on its mood so much how angry it is. However, you still have Rav Chista's thing that still does it, based on what Rav had said before, cat is not able to make an animal drusa unless, like Rav Chista is saying, it's a baby animal, a baby sheep or a baby goat.
Whereas in the previous version?
In the previous version, Rav Chista would be going according to Biribi, and the halacha wouldn't necessarily be like him.
But only if there's Matzilim.
There would be a difference between Matzilim and not.
Here
we're saying the second version is that Rav Chista is going according to the Rabbanon, who don't make any sense. He didn't bring the Inyan of Matzilin. Biribi talks about that.
Yeah.
We explained the Braisa that we thought to contradict Rav Chista with was saying according to the second version as according to Biribi. Rav Chista himself never said anything about Matzilin.
Right.
He's going according to the Chachamim.
Right.
Okay. Bominer of Kahana Mirab. Okay, so now Rav Kahana asks Rav in this connection, Yesh Drusa Lachosel, Ein Drusa Lachosel. Is a cat able to make an animal Drusa or not? Omalei. So instead of answering them directly, Rav answers, "Af l'cholda yesh drusa." Yes, even a cholda, even a weasel or whatever it is, which is smaller than a cat, is able to make an animal drusa. Then Rav Kahana asks, "Yesh drusa l'cholda, ain't drusa l'cholda?" So can a cholda create drusa or not? Now, why is he asking them back to back? Let's talk and we'll say in a second what Tosafot says about it. But wait, Omalei, and Rav answers him, "Af l'chosel ain't drusa." No, even a cat is not, which is larger than a weasel, is not able to make an animal drusa. Okay, so then he asks about the two of them together, l'chosel or l'cholda yesh lahen drusa or ain't lahen drusa. So what about when it comes? Let's talk collectively about a cat and a weasel. Are they able to make an animal drusa or not? Omalei, and Rav answers him, l'chosel yesh drusa l'cholda ain't drusa. A cat, yes, a weasel, not. Now, so we seem to have different contradictory statements of Rav. On the one hand, he's saying that even a weasel is able to make an animal drusa, how much more so a cat. Then the second time, he says that even a cat can't make it drusa, how much more so a weasel, which is smaller. And the third time, he's saying a cat, yes, a weasel, not. The loy kasha, there's no contradiction between the three statements. When Rav says that even a cholda, a weasel, is able to make something trade, he's talking about oifers. He's talking when it comes to birds. Birds being smaller than animals, yes, even a cholda is able to make them drusa.
So it's considered weaker than a weasel?
Yes, apparently. So when he says that even a cat can't make an animal drusa, he's talking about Imri Rav Ravi, he's talking about larger sheep. And obviously animals larger than that, because Rav said before that only a wolf or larger would be able to make them drusa. And hod amalei l'chosu yesh drusa l'chol de'en drusa, when he says a cat yes, a weasel not, he's talking b'goy m'floy, he's talking about baby sheep and baby goats, like Rav Chista had said. Now, so that answers the three statements of Rav, but why is Rav Kahana asking the questions in the way he is? So Tosfos gives two possibilities. One from the Rivam, that what it is these questions were asked at different times. One time, Rav Kahana is dealing with the question of treifas of birds, and so he asks him, when it comes to a bird, can a cat make it treif? And so Rav is telling him, even, not only a cat, but even a weasel can make it treif. Another time, he's dealing with large animals, and he asks about a chulda, and Rav tells him, even a cat can't over there. And then the third time, he's talking about babies. So Rav Kahana himself, when he asked the different questions, they were in different circumstances. Yeah. That's the Rivam's explanation. Then Tosfos says, not necessarily. It could be that they were all back to back. Having asked whether once he asked whether a cat can do drusa, then and Rav is telling him, you should know there's a certain case, there's a certain type of situation where even a holder can make a drusa. Okay, so then the question is that always? Let's narrow that down. Is that always the case? And Rav tells him, on the contrary, sometimes even a cat can't do drusa. And therefore, so he's asking them back to back, and therefore narrowing down what in which case is yes and in which case is no.
It cannot be always, because otherwise it would be contradictory statement.
That's the point. So he's trying to narrow down.
So,
yeah.
So that's
why Tosfos says that he may have asked him them back to back, because yeah, once he asked the first one, then he's asking the second one for clarification and so forth. Okay. Boy, Rav Ashi. So now Rav Ashi asks in this connection, Shar Oifus Tmeim, Yesh Lahem Drusa or Ein Lahem Drusa? When it comes to other treifa birds, we mention in the Mishnah, we mention a hawk, we mention another kind of bird called a gas, which is a falcon or some other species of hawk or something like that.
What's the matter of asking for treifa?
Well, the question isn't whether the treifa animal can be the victim of these drusa. The question is,
yeah.
Other Oifus Tmeim, for example, is a bat, let's say, or a stork or any of the couple of dozen other treifa species of birds, are they capable of making a chicken or a dove or whatever drusa?
I would say things, yes.
Yeah, but that's
now,
because
only tummy birds are predators. Tahar birds are not predators.
Yeah.
So we know, as we're going to learn later on in the parak, that there are 24 species of treifa birds. So the question is, this that we're saying that predatory birds are able to make birds are able to make kosher birds drusa, does that apply only to the predatory birds mentioned in the Mishnah, the gnats and the gas, which are the gnats and the gas, which are again a hawk and a falcon or something
gas,
like that.
A
gas. You have different explanations. I think the Oruch explains that it's a falcon. Rashi's translation is that it's another species of a hawk, a gas hawk. It's called in English. Whatever. Anyway, the point is, does it apply only to those two? Yeah. The point is, does it apply only to those two? What about, for example, a vulture? What about, for example, a raven, etc.? Are those capable of making
vulture for sure?
Again. Vultures, there's no question. If they rip apart a bird, obviously it's trick. We're not talking about ripping apart. We're talking about the specific thing of drusa,
yeah,
of being able to, that when they put their talons or claws or whatever you call them into the bird, that they will inject the toxin that kills it. Is that the case with other predatory birds? We didn't mention an eagle. We only, because we didn't. That's the question. That's part of Rav Ashi's question. Now, later on in the parak, when we talk about kosher and non-kosher birds, we're going to talk about that all of the predatory birds are treif. So the question isn't here what other birds are predators. We know there are many other types of predators, and that what they do with their feet to what they eat is called dirus. The question is, as far as the specific treifa of drusa over here, does it apply only to the two birds mentioned in the Mishnah or to other ones? Amalei Rav Hillel Rav Ashi. So Rav Hillel tells Rav Ashi, the answer is like this: Ki havenan be Rav Kahana, when we were in the yeshiva of Rav Kahana, Omar, he said, Shar Oifus Tmeim Yesh Lahem Drusa. Yes, other non-kosher birds that are predators are able to make a kosher bird drusa. So the question is, how does that fit with our Mishnah? We said in the Mishnah the exact wording in the Mishnah, we said Rabbi Yehuda had said, and we said before Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing with the Chacham, he's clarifying. He says, drusas hanets va'oif hadak, that when it comes to smaller birds, a hawk can make them treif by drusa, or drusas hagas va'oif hagas, when it comes to a larger bird, like, for example, a chicken or a turkey or what have you, you would need a gas, you would need a falcon or a goshawk or whatever it is.
Make it,
whatever, so whatever, yeah. Yeah. Anyway, the point is, so therefore it seems it's only those. The answer is drusa hanets v'dekavasei v'enoch v'dezuter minayu. We would say like this: When it comes to a hawk, it's able to make a bird chase, even if it's only exactly the same size as the bird that it's attacking. But the inach b'dezutrumina, the other predatory birds, are able to make a bird drusa, but only if that other bird is smaller than them. So let's say, for example, an owl or a crow or what have you, they could make a kosher bird chase, but you would have to look at what's the size of the attacker, what's the size of the animal that it's attacking, and compare the two. If the attacker is larger than the victim, then it makes it drusa. If not, then no. But the exception then would be the hawk that we mentioned in our Mishnah, where a hawk is able to make even a bird of the same size as itself treka. As opposed to all the other ones. Oh, yeah. The ikadamri, another version of that distinction is as follows. The distinction would be that a hawk is able to make even an animal, even a bird, larger than it. The inach b'dechavasayu, all the other non-kosher birds, all the other predatory birds, are able to make a bird treif only if they're the same size as it. B'dechavasayu, only if they're the same size as it. So that's how it is.
So what's the conclusion?
So the conclusion is, in other words, that's what it is. In other words, the bottom line is other treifa birds are able to make a kosher bird drusa. However, it has to be that the victim is no larger than they are. It can be the same size or it can be smaller, according to the ikadamri, which the halacha is like it. But not larger. If, for example, if let's say a raven, let's say, or an eagle or what have you, attacks a kosher bird which is larger than it, nothing happens as far as drusa. A large turkey, whatever. There's different sizes of eagles too, but whatever. The point is, the principle of the matter, fine. So not eagles. If a crow or a raven attacks a turkey, then there's no problem with drusa. Unless, of course, it punctured all the way inside, which is another matter. But when it comes to a hawk, then the bird that it attacks will be drusa, even if the bird that it attacks is larger than the hawk.
For example,
I don't know. I'm not familiar enough with the size of the birds to know. But whatever, if
the hawk attacks an eagle.
An eagle is not kosher anyway.
Right, we're talking about
kosher birds. Okay, fine. So that's what it is. Yeah, let's say a turkey. Okay. Onward. Omer of Kahana Mishmeder of Shimi Barashi, Ein Drusa L'Shul. A fox is not able to make an animal drusa. Yes, a fox is a predator, but when it puts its claws or whatever you want to call them into the animal, it won't make drusa. It won't inject this venom. So the question is, Eini, is that so? V'haki Osir of Dimi Yomu. When of Dimi came from Eretz Yisrael to Babel, he told like this: Ma'ase v'doras Shul Rochel b'merchat shel Beis Shini. It happened once that a fox clawed a female sheep, a ewe, in the bathhouse of Beis Shini, which is the name of the place, or b'mayis lefnei chachamim, and the case was brought to the chachamim, the shaila was brought to the chachamim, v'amru, and the chachamim said, yes, drusa. There is an issue of drusa over here.
A fox that attacked a
female sheep.
It's called Rachel?
It's called a Rachel, yeah. So therefore, see, that's where the name Rachel comes from, yes, indeed. So therefore, so you see that a fox is able to make an animal drusa. Now, Tosfos says the Gemara could have tried to answer that here we're talking about it was a baby ewe, and in that case, we said before that there's no question, but we said before that even a cat is able to make drusa. Right. The answer is that Tosfos says in that case, then he didn't have to mention that it was a fox. The same din would apply if it was a cat. So the only reason on the face of it he mentioned a fox is to say that a fox is capable of making drusa even in larger animals. However, the answer is Amr of Safra, he chosel haba. The answer is that actually, yes, it was a cat that we're talking about. So,
It was not a fox, right.
It was a cat. So therefore, no proof from that. So when you're telling us that foxes are not able to make a drusa, then fine. When they said that it was drusa, so we're talking about it was a cat, and evidently it was a baby. Evidently it was a baby ewe, like we said before. Yeah. Okay. The ikadamri, another version of
a ewe is bigger than a cat.
Doesn't matter whether it is the point. Well, we're talking about a baby one again.
Baby you.
I guess it doesn't matter whether it's bigger or smaller than a cat. We said before that's susceptible to drusa from a cat. Okay. The ikadamri, another version of the discussion goes like this. That it starts out with Rav Kahana telling us in the name of Rav Shimi Ba'ashi that a fox is able to make an animal drusa. And the question would be, Aini, is that so? That a fox one time clawed a ewe in the bathhouse of Beitini. And the case was brought to the Chachamim, and they said, there's no drusa. And the answer is, Omer of Safra, who killed Hava. You have the story wrong. In that case, it was a dog. And a dog, as Omer of Yosef, Nakinan, we have the Kabbalah from our revenge. Obviously, but when you mean the dog, a dog attacks. Yes. Omer of Yosef, Nakinan, Angel of Silakelah. So Rav Yosef says, in that connection, we have the Kabbalah from our rebellion that a dog is not able to make an animal drusa. So the second version is that a fox can indeed make drusa. They had the wrong animal. It was a dog that attacked the ewe. That's why there was no drusa. But if it had been a fox, in fact, it would have been. Fine. More rules about drusa. Amar Abaye, Naktinan. We also have the Kabbalah from our rebellion. Naktinan literally means we hold in our hands. But it means, in other words, that we know it as a fact. So we know it as a fact. We have the Kabbalah from our Rebbeim. Ein Jerusalem. Okay, so that's what we said. Ein Jerusalem. Yeah. What? Knockup. Knockup is the Aramaic word for hold. So Naktinan Ein Jerusalem. Sorry, that was Ein Jerusalem. Was Rabbi Yosef. So Abaye is saying Naktinan Ein Jerusalem. The whole concept of Jerusalem only applies if the attacker clawed the victim with its front paws. But not if it did it with his back legs, because this whole concept of injecting venom would only work if it used its front paws. Especially if we follow this idea that's talking about bacteria or whatever, then those tend to be under the front paws because that's what it uses to actually attack and claw and whatever, with not so much the hind legs. And furthermore, Abaye says, here's another rule. En Jerusa elevasi perden. The rule of Jerusa only applies if it actually uses claws. Only if it uses claws. La poki shein deloy, which means not if it bit with its teeth. Biting with its teeth would be just like any other puncture. If it punctured all the way to the inside of the animal, then you have to start checking if anything got. But no venom, right.
Which animal?
Any animal. We're talking about any attacker. That's why we were talking about yesterday, for example, a snake is not able to make an animal drusa because the only way it attacks is with its teeth. Now, it can poison the animal, which is another matter, which is we're going to learn later on in the parak. You're not allowed to eat the meat from such an animal because of sakana. It's not called drusa, right? Yeah. By the way, Rashi and Eruvin, we didn't talk about a bear, but that's true. So then, we said minazev lamaila, right? We said anything larger than a wolf. So a bear is larger than a wolf. Yeah. Okay. By the way, the Rashi and Eruvin, that's referenced here on the side, explains Nakinan. He says mesodas me'abisenu minag me'abisenu. We have a mesoda from our ancestors and a minag from our rabbein. That's what Nakinan means. Okay. Anyway.
Have a minag.
We have a minag of from our rabbein, and we have a mesoda from our ancestors. Yeah. Okay.
So we hold that.
Okay. And continues Abaye, and Jerusa Elamidas. Furthermore, the whole concept of Jerusa only applies if the attacker intended to attack. La Poki Shaloy Midas Zeloy, as opposed to if it didn't intend to attack. For example, you could have, let's say, while it was sleeping, imagine, for example, that you have, let's say, a wolf or a lion or whatever, while it's sleeping, it swipes a nearby animal. Not called Jerusa. Or fell off a roof, and then, right, yeah, any of those, yeah. And also, Ein Jerusa El Mechayim, the whole concept of Jerusa would only apply while the attacker is alive. La Puki, La Chamisa Deloy, as opposed to after it's killed, as opposed to after it's dead, then not. I'm going to interject a second. Wait a minute. Amri, so they asked on that. Hashta Shalom Das Amrit Lo. You already said that even if the attacker was alive, but it didn't have Das to attack, then you're saying it doesn't cause Jerusa. Much more so after it's dead. If you have, let's say, a dead lion falls off a roof, of course that's Shalom Yidasi. Why would you have to say it? The answer is, no, but the chiddush of that last case is, let's say the lion or what have you did do Jerusa. It did sink its claws into the animal with intent. But before it had a chance to pull out its claws, somebody chopped off the hand, the paw. Well, the Doris did do so for school the yard, but then they chopped off the paw before it could withdraw it by itself. So the point of that is Maudetema, you would think if you didn't have that last point, you would think Bahadi the Doris Shorizihare, as soon as it puts its claws in, right then it injects the venom, and therefore it wouldn't matter if the claw it's too late to cut off the paw afterwards. No, Kamash Malan, that is a bias point. Bahadi the Sholif Shorizihare. It only injects this toxin when it's withdrawing its paw. So therefore, as long as you catch it before it managed to withdraw it, then you're good. Now, mind you, Tosfos points out if you just see, for example, Tosfos gives an example. If you see a hawk on top of a kosher bird and you see its talons stuck into the bird, that we wouldn't necessarily apply the rule of the Gemara over here because you don't know how many times it stuck them in before when you weren't looking. We're talking about where you saw the whole thing from beginning to end and you know that the attacker only put in its claws or its talons the one time and then you chopped it off before it had a chance to withdraw. That's when the Gemara would be saying that's okay. Suppose you have a lion goes into a place where there's a bunch of oxen. The nimtzipodin begabe shall echad mehen. Later on, you find a claw stuck into the back of one of the animals, a detached claw from the lion stuck in the back of one of the animals. Ein choshishin shemi ari dorsin. You don't have to be concerned that the lion may have clawed this animal and therefore it's chained. My timer, why is that? So like, Roy Aroyas Dursin, most lions do Drissa, and therefore you would think that makes it a Roiv, so therefore you would think, therefore you have a problem over here. When we also name Dursin, it's only a minority of lions that don't do Drissa. On the other hand, the Choladuris ain't Sipona Neshmetis. But on the other hand, usually when a lion or whatever it is attacks, it doesn't usually lose a claw in the process. Therefore, so it's kind of like you have two opposing things going on over here. On the one hand, you have, because most lions are dirtless, and therefore you would think there's a problem over here, but on the other hand, it's also not normal for the lion to lose a claw. Here, since it has a claw sticking in it out of its back, we can assume that what happened is how did this ox get the claw on its back? The claw was stuck in the wall. It happened to be stuck in the wall from beforehand, and this ox rubbed against the wall over there, and then it happened to and therefore it got the claw on its back. So the question is, not the whole paw. We're talking about one single claw. Well, yeah. So like this, in other words, it may have been stuck in the wall from weeks or months ago, and then now all of a sudden this ox came by and then rubbed up against the wall and then got it stuck in its back. Not necessarily do we have to assume that it was attacked by the lion. Now, one second. So first of all, we have to continue the discussion over here. But second of all, Tosfos has a different understanding of the two opposing factors that we're dealing with over here. So one second. So the question is, on the other hand, you should argue the other way around. We know it's true that most oxen do scratch and rub themselves against the wall. It's only a minority that don't. So therefore, fine, on that basis, if on that basis alone, you mischaken means they rub against the wall because they scratch themselves. It's true that only a minority don't. However, on the other hand, usually when an animal scratches itself against the wall, it doesn't wind up with a claw sticking out of its back. So you should argue maybe the other way around. The fact that you have a claw sticking out means that you have a reyus over here. You have a reason for suspicion that something is unusual over here. Ema ari dosa. You should have to say maybe the lion clawed it. So why don't we say that way? The answer is fine. Ikalamehochi. You're right. You could. There is a chance either way. Therefore, uki milsa achesde. Therefore, what we do is we leave things according to their chazaka that they had before. Havalei sofik drusa. So therefore, what you wind up with is you have a case. It's a sofik whether this animal was drusa or not. Now, most animals are not treif. It had a chazaka that it wasn't treif before. So we keep to the chazaka from before, as we learned in the first paragraph. The chazaka is a very important thing. The Rav Latainei, now Rav in this is going according to his Shitta, Dama Ein Choshishin L'Sofik Jerusa, where Rav says, we learned near the beginning of the Perek, that Rav holds that if you have a Sofik on Jerusa, you don't have to worry about it. So here, fine, you have a Sofik, but Rav says you don't have to worry about it. Now, Tosfos has a bit of a different understanding of the of the two factors over here. When we say that most lions do drissa and only a minority don't, but on the other hand, usually they don't lose a nail in the process either. Tosfos understands that what it means is like this. The Rabbeinu Tam explains in Tosfos. When we say that most lions do drissa, we don't mean that they actually go about doing it necessarily. What we mean is most lions are capable of doing drissa. Most of them are healthy. They're capable of attacking. You have a minority that are sick and can't. On the other hand, most healthy lions, when they attack, they don't lose a claw in the process.
Right.
Here, if you have that it lost a claw, it must mean we're talking about a sick lion over here. So therefore, it's much less likely in that sense that it actually attacked. Because if it was sick, it doesn't have the energy to attack. And that would explain why it lost the claw. So then it's more likely that it was stuck in the wall and the animal rubbed against it. So it's actually not that it was stuck in the wall. Actually, what Tosfos says is we could assume, therefore, that in the first part of the discussion, that what happened is this sick lion was lying next to the wall over there with its paws stuck out over there. The ox is rubbing against the wall and also happens to rub against the lion's foot, and therefore it gets a claw on its back. And then the Gemara asks, okay, but on the other hand, you could argue that it's fine. Most oxen rub against the wall, but they don't usually do it right where the lion's paw happens to be sitting. And then the answer is, there's a chance one way, but there's a chance the other way. Either way, you have something unusual happen over here. So therefore, Marsha explains that Tosfos gives this whole detailed scenario with all the details over here in order to establish that what it means is, Rav would say we have an exactly 50-50 chance over here that it came from Drissa
back against the wall next to a lion.
That's the same. It's possible. Okay, but on the other hand, it's also not usual that the lion. It's also on the one hand, again, most lions are healthy, but on the other hand, most lions don't lose claws either. Only sick ones do, and sick ones are not going down.
They've lost the claws.
And sick ones are not
present
going.
But
if we saw the lion in there, then okay.
Why can't we say they lost the claw, ran away, and then the ox came? Why do we have to say that the ox was...
Because that's what Marshall is explaining, is that we want to establish that not only in a case where there's where it's more likely that there wasn't Drissa, but even in a case where it's exactly a 50-50 chance that there was Drissa, then Rav is still going to say that Sopha Drissa he's not worried about. But even if we assume...
Not worried about
even,
that there was
Drissa. Of course there could be Drissa, but we're talking about in a case like this, Rav would understand that because there's an exactly 50-50 chance, he says you can be maple on it. If it had been 51% that either it was after all a healthy lion and somehow unexpectedly it attacked as healthy lions normally do, but unexpectedly somehow it lost a claw, versus that it was a sick lion and it didn't attack and it just and then the ox rubbed up against the wall over there and got the claw stuck in its back. So Rav would say, according to Tosfos, that it's an exactly 50-50 chance. If it was 51%, if it was a 51% chance that there was no Drissa, then there'd be no Chiddush. And of course, you have a preponderance of reasons to say that there wasn't. But even where it's 50-50, you would say that. That's how Tosfos learns. Fine. By the way, in this discussion over here, we're seeing that it's not just the lion itself going in there doesn't seem in and of itself to be a problem. That doesn't already create a Sopha Drissa over there. Only if you find the nail in the animal's back. So you have some Rishonim understand that that's true according to everybody, and that would be true according to Halacha. Just because a lion goes into the area doesn't in and of itself necessarily create a problem, unless we have some kind of evidence or circumstantial evidence, as we'll see as we go on in the Gemara. On the other hand, you have Rishonim, the Ram, for example, who understand that this is only according to Ram. Shmuel, who says soon that we are choshish for Sopha Drissa, would say just the presence of a lion going in there is already enough of a reason that there might be Sopha Drissa. Okay. Okay.
Even if you suspect Drissa, you have to find a clue.
No, that's the thing. If we say that there's Sopha Drissa and you have to be machmir, that would mean even if you didn't find the clue, it might mean that any of the animals there had been attacked. Okay. And therefore, all of them, you would have to do Boudicca. And since we can't do Boudicca nowadays, then, so we'd have to consider them all traits itself, which actually we'll talk about a little bit about that on Omid Beis. But, so you have those different approaches in it. This is the idea that I mentioned yesterday, that it does say in Shulchan Aruch, that fine, looking at it from that point of view, you would say, in principle, if a cat went into a chicken coop, then you would have a problem of Safed Zerusa. However, since most cats are domesticated and don't usually attack the chickens, then we don't have to worry about that.
Let me ask you a question. If you had a cat at home and you find that the cat was next to a piece of meat with or without her claws, you didn't... Is there
if the piece of meat has been checked already, what's the problem? You know, it can't be more dead than it is.
Yeah, but I mean, it could still instill venom in the piece of meat.
The venom that we're talking about is something that would cause the animal victim to die. We're not talking about something that would poison a human being. Otherwise, we would say, false emission sakana. No, the fact is no. Okay. Otherwise, it would be otherwise. In these cases, we would say, forget about Tereza. It's also Mishum Sakana. Yeah. Okay. Amar Abaya, Loyam Moran El Tziporin. Now, Abaya says there are some caveats to all that. This is only talking about these rules that we just said that the Rav is saying. You can assume that the animal scratched up against, that the ox scratched up against the wall and got the claw stuck in it. Would only no El Tziporin. That only applies if you find an actual claw in the animal. But if you find the mark of a claw over there, then you do have to be concerned that there was Jerusa, because then it's a more normal circumstance. Usually the lion or whatever it is attacks and doesn't lose a claw, and therefore if you find a scratch on the claw afterwards, then you have a problem that it might have been Jerusa.
So then what happens?
So then you would have the usual situation. You have to do Bedikah on it. The usual rule with Jerusa is Jerusa doesn't automatically make the animal trace. What it is when there's Jerusa, you have to check, as the Gemara is going to say later, Keneged Bnei Me'ayim, you have to check whether there's reddening in the intestines or other internal organs or whatever, which is a sign of this infection or the effect of the toxin or whatever it is.
So before you check this, you find Jerusa, what do you do?
I don't understand. If you have an animal that you see a claw mark on it, after you shecht it, you have to check
before you shecht it.
Well, if you want, you can keep it alive for 12 months. If it survives, then it means it's not a Jerusa. Okay. Although we'll talk about that a little later in the parak, about the details of keeping it alive for 12 months, but okay, anyway. But Tzipora Nami Lo Yamoren El Alacha. Furthermore, Abaya says this rule we said about that if you find a claw in it, then we say Rav is saying that it's okay. That would only be if the claw is fresh. But if it's a dry claw, Avda de Mishtamta, then it's more likely for it to have fallen out during an attack, and therefore there's more reason to suspect that there was an actual attack. Also, even if the claw is fresh, this would only apply if you only find one. But if you find two or three of them, then already you have a chash of Jerusa. Because it's not normal, because even if you're going to argue, a lion might conceivably, an old lion, a sick lion or whatever, might conceivably lose one claw, or you might have one stuck in the wall or whatever, but you're not going to have two or three of them. That last detail, though, is only provided that you find them on the back of the ox in the same pattern as they would be on the paw of the lion. In other words, if you find, let's say, one, you know, you find one near its head and one in the middle and one near its tail or something, or you find them, like, you know, 10 inches apart or whatever, then you don't have to worry about it. Or if you find them in a triangle shape or whatever. We're talking about if you find them close to each other in the form in which you would find them on the live lion.
Then they have to be wet?
So what we said is you have any of the following. If they're fresh,
mm-hmm.
meaning, in other words, so Rashi actually says fresh, shahoya bodam, if there's blood in it. So if it's a fresh nail, if it's a dry nail, then you have a problem because a dry nail is more likely to come out during an attack. If it's fresh nails and you have two or three of them, then you also have a problem. Only if you have one single fresh nail, which is unusual for it to come out from a healthy lion, that is when Rav is saying that you can assume that it just scratched itself on the wall and got it stuck in.
Fresh nails that come with...
Again, Rashi says, Shehoya Badam, there's blood in it, not in the nail itself. Nails don't have blood, but in other words, in the little pad or whatever that's attached to it. Yeah. Okay. Itma. So, okay, let's get into a discussion of this point about Sopik Dursa. Rav Omer Ein Choshishin L'Sopik Jerusa. Rav says we're not worried about Sopik Jerusa. Or Shmuel Omer Choshishin L'Sopik Jerusa. Shmuel says we are concerned about it. Now, we've talked a number of times in the Perek that the Rambam understands that what it is a difference between the halachas like Shmuel in this, even though usually in Dinei Issa V'Heter, the halachas usually like Rab. The Rambam understands that it's a difference between Drusa and all the other seven types of traits. That only Drusa, do we say that Sopik Drusa is also, whereas in all the other cases, we would say if you have a Sopik of one of the other seven types of Terephus, then it would be Mutter. We've talked about that a few times already. You have a number of other opinions of Rishonim who take different views on that. For example, if you have a Sopik, we talked about earlier in the Perek, let's say that you find that there are holes in the lung, but you have a Sopik whether they existed when the animal was alive or after it was shechted. Different cases like that. So the Rambam lays down a general rule that with the other seven categories of traits, punctured, cut, missing, etc., that if you have a suffix whether the condition existed when the animal was alive or not, then you can be made. So only with Jurusa or Rimachner, which is what Shmuel was saying over here, suffix Jurusa Mutter. But you have different other understandings of Rishonim that don't necessarily make that distinction between Jurusa and the other types of Terephus over here.
The
Rambam is one. In this, you have many other Rishonim, so I'm not sure what the actual halacha is like. But, for example, Tosfos earlier in the Perek explains that the reason why Shmuel is more worried about suffix Jurusa is because Jurusa is much more common than the other types of Terephus. The various other categories of traces that we've been talking about are all relatively rare. Drusa, when you have predators around, is fairly common. So that's one idea of it. You have other Rishonim talk about, for example, that, again, we just said we're talking about a 50-50 chance. So Shmuel might say, okay, but it's a Sopik D'Oraisa. He's going to say you got to be Machne. Another way of looking at it would be... So that's the thing. So we would say, in other words, when we said, so for example, okay, when you have a suffix, whether it even existed, when the animal was alive or not, or not only you have a suffix, whether it existed, you have strong reason to think, based on the position and the shape of these holes that they were caused by the butcher, let's say, then that's different.
That's different.
But otherwise we would have to be Machner, right? That overrides. Well, so actually one point that some of the Rishonim make is like this. We have a concept that an animal has a chazaka of not being straight. Fine. On the other hand, we also have, we talked in the first paragraph, that an animal, when it's alive, has a chazaka of being also on the grounds of Eva Menachai. But one way of looking at it is, okay, therefore, when you have any suffix in shchita, you have to be machmir no matter what, because you need an absolutely valid shchita to take away that chazaka of Eva Menachai. But as far as Terephus, maybe you could be more lenient in some cases. That might be Rab's opinion. Whereas Shmuel might be taking the view, no, what it is, given that before it had a Cheskas Isser on the grounds of Eva Menachai, then now the Chazaka continues that once you have reason to suspect that there may have been Drusa or whatever, then you have to be Machmer on that also, in order to get it out of the, in order to remove the original Chazaka of that it was also on the grounds of Eva Menachai, you would have to have that there's no suffix that it's true. That might be one reason for Shmuel's opinion also. Whereas Rav would disagree, right? Rav would say that once we took care of the chazaka of Eiv Menachai by the fact that we see that there was a proper shchita, then we can follow the newly established chazaka that most animals are kosher and not that most animals are not shaved.
Whereas Shmuel would say
basically that we take the chazaka from one and continue to apply it to the following scenario. So again, so Rav is saying we don't have to worry about Sopik Drusa, and Shmuel saying yes. So let's clarify what's the case where they're arguing about. Dekula alma Sopik ol, Sopik lay ol. Both of them agree that if you have a Sopik, whether the predator even entered the area at all, fine, ema lay ol. Then you can say we can assume that it didn't come in, and therefore there's not a problem. Furthermore, Sopik kalba, Sopik shunra. If you have a Sopik, what kind of predatory animal went in there, whether it was a cat or whether it was a dog? Sopik all, Sopik loy all. If you have a Sopik, whether anything even came in there or not, ema loy all. Then we can say that it didn't come in. Therefore, you don't have a Sopik. Sopik kalba, Sopik shunra. If you have a doubt whether it was a dog or a cat, ema kalba. Then you can assume that it was a dog, and we said before, a dog is not able to make any animal jurisa.
Why would you say it's a dog more than a cat?
Again, because given that we have a suffix, whether there was even a predator that can make the animal jurisa there or not, even Shmuel is not going to say we're so machmir to that degree of suffix. Furthermore, all shosik the ace of benayu, if a predator went in there, but then it just sat there quietly between them, fine, still no problem. Ema shloma shavim. then we can say, okay, it decided to be at peace with them. Now, she mentions occasionally you have wild animals that become tame and they live together with people without causing harm.
Right.
So you have, mind you, you have a Gemara in Bava Kamma that says that such animals can never be really domesticated. They can always revert. They can always revert to their wild nature at a moment's notice. But as long as we see that it's sitting there quietly, then okay. By the way, worth mentioning, there's an interesting sicha in that connection that I've talked about. You have in Bilam's brachas to the Jewish people, in a couple of places, he compares them to a lion. The one idea behind Bilam, yeah, in Parshas Balak. The Jewish people, yeah. The one idea of it is one idea behind that. Then the Rebbe explains is related to this concept. So we're saying that you can have a lion that, let's say, even you raised it from babyhood, and you know you think you've domesticated it, but at any moment it can revert to its usual wild nature, and that's relevant lahalacha. That's always considered mord. The same way, in other words, you can have a Jew who's been for a long time separated from Yiddishkeit, and he seems completely like all the other goyim around, but then all of a sudden, at a moment's notice, all of a sudden his pintle of Yid can be woken up.
What
about the other way around?
If he's been in Yiddishkeit for a long time, can he just suddenly wake up and leave?
I suppose that could happen as well. I mean, you have Yochanan Kohen Gadol with a Kohen Gadol for 80 years and became a Stuki, fine. But that's not the point of that metaphor. The point is that even the Yid seems to be not like a lion at all. He seems to be completely tamed and domesticated and become like the Goyim. Nevertheless, at any moment, he can... Okay. Anyway, returning to our Gemara. Furthermore, Kota Reshid Chadminai, what happens if the lion came in there and it attacked and cut off the head and killed, that is, one of the animals? Then we can assume noch meriske. Then we can assume that in doing that, in killing the one animal, that calmed down its rage. Then we don't have to worry that it did drissa to any of the other animals after that. Now, it is true that if you weren't there to see what's going on, the Shach points out in Shulchan Aruch, then you have a real possibility. Maybe it did drissa to some of the animals beforehand. And then it finally finished off with killing one of them. So then you would have a potential problem. We're talking about where you saw the whole thing, and you saw it came in there, it killed one of the animals. Then you don't have to worry about drift after that. Okay, fine. Another case: ihu kama avoy v'ihu kama kauteron. What happens if the predator is roaring? The inu is making noise.
Uh-huh.
The inu kamakaukaran and the other kosher animals or birds or what have you are clucking or mooing or whatever it is. Rashi points out that in Hebrew you have, just like in English, you have different words for the names. There are different names for the noises made by different animals. Yeah, so ma'avoy would be the word in Aramaic for the roaring of a lion, and makaukaron would be for the clucking of chickens. Anyway, so if they're both making noise, then also we don't have to worry about drusa. The usi come avasi hadadi, because that means they're equally scared of each other. The chickens, let's say, are scared. The oxen, let's say, are scared of the lion, but apparently the lion is also scared of them, and that's why he's roaring.
The lion is scared of the ox.
Yeah, it could happen. He's surrounded by a bunch of oxen. No, because we're not just talking one ox. We're not just one-on-one thing. So you have a bunch of oxen. But there, yeah. So therefore, if they're all making noise, then we don't have to worry that there may have been drusa over there. Ki, pligi, the iu, koshosik, the inu, kamakaukaron. The machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, would be in the case. Suppose that the predator is quiet, and the victim, the potential victims over there, the oxen or chickens or what have you, are making noise. So does that mean that there was drusa there or not? Shmuel would say that indicates that the lion or whatever was attacking them, and that's why they're making noise in panic. So therefore, it means there was drissa. And since we don't know which one he attacked, then all of them are potential.
You heard the noise.
You heard them. You heard the chickens clucking, but you didn't hear the cat or whatever making you. Yeah. Yeah. Well, no. Okay. Well, not a cat. Whatever. The point is, whatever. A weasel or whatever kind of animal we set up there. Yeah. So Shmuel will hold. That would be a strong indication that it was actually attacking. That's why they're afraid of it, and therefore it means that all of them are now potential jurists. As opposed to Rav, will say they're only making noise. They're only clucking or whatever because they're afraid of it, but not because it actually attacks. So therefore, Rav will say that in that case also, you can be lenient. You can consider it a topic where you can be lenient, where Shmuel would disagree. And again, halacha is like Shmuel. So if you have there, then a lion goes into an area where there are a bunch of oxen, and it's quiet and they're making noise, then all of them are suffered suicide. And you have other details about this mentioned in Shulchan Aruch, by the way, including one interesting one, that if you have, let's say, for example, you have a bunch of chickens in a coop, where you have, let's say, for example, so we're talking, okay, usually a cat doesn't do jirsa, but you could have a cat that decides to attack the chickens. So let's say, for example, you don't have an opening there big enough for the cat to actually get into, but you have, let's say, enough for it to stick in its paw. Then you have a real problem, even if the cat is not making noise, because there's not much room in there. Any of them could be easily within reach of it. And we don't even say if it killed one of them, then it calms it down, because the fact that it can't see what it's doing means it could still be blindly attacking whatever comes its way. Okay. Omer HaMemer.
That you wouldn't know before he's pulling
it. No, in other words, if you come, let's say, halfway through and you see it's got its paw stuck in there, then yeah, it's Sa'amema says the halacha, bottom line, is we do have to be concerned about suffered drusa, like Shmuel said. Omele Rav Ashi la'amema haide Rav, right? So Rav Ashi says, Sa'amema, what about this that Rav said? Usually in Hilchas Issa v'Heter, the halacha is usually like Rav. Omele lo shmili. So Sa'amema answers, I didn't hear of it. Kloimer lo svirim, which he means to say, I don't hold it.
What do you say,
Lo Shmia? Well, the word Shma in Aramaic, as in Hebrew, has two meanings. It can mean to actually hear, as in sound waves getting into your ear,
right.
And it can mean to understand or accept. Now, for example, when we say Shma Yisrael, the Shma Yisrael, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, doesn't just mean somebody should be saying Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, you should hear it with your ears. It means understand it, comprehend it, accept it, etc. So therefore, when he's saying, it sounds like he's saying, I didn't hear of it, which is like a respectful way of saying, but really what he means by that is I heard of it, but I don't accept it as being valid. That's true also, yeah. That's true. When you say in English, I hear you, yeah. Very true. Yeah. Okay. The Ibois Ema, or another possibility you could answer is not that Amema is saying I discount Rav's opinion. We could say Hodebe Rav, Lagabi Shmuel, Lagabi de Shmuel. As a matter of fact, we'll just leave. It's not that noisy outside anyway. We only have a few more minutes. I don't think it's going to bother us that much. Another possibility is the reason we don't pass him like Rav is because Rav himself changed his mind and ended up agreeing with Shmuel. We see that Gahu Shaukafa the Suffolk Drusas, because there was a case of a Shaukafa full of birds that were Suffolk Drusa. Rashi says that Shaukafa means a basket. Tosa says that Shaukafa is actually the Aramaic translation of a nest. So the point is, whatever, it was a nest or a basket full of birds that were Suffolk Drusa. The Osala Kameh Rab, where they were brought to Rav to paskin on. So in other words, exactly, you had like a basket or a nest full of birds. A hawk had gotten in there. You don't know whether any of them was Drusa. Also lakameh Rav, so it was brought to Rav to paskin on. Shadrinhu lakameh de Shmuel, so Rav in turn sent them on to Shmuel to paskin on them. And Shmuel, what he did is chankinu v'shadinu b'nara. What he did, he took these birds, he strangled them and threw them in the river, as we're going to explain in a second why he did that. Now, so the point is, why would Rav have sent them to Shmuel? The Isak Daidach Loi Hodebe, if Rav had not changed his mind and would have said that just because a hawk got in there doesn't necessarily mean there was Drusa, Lishrinu, then Rav himself should have said it's Mutter. Nothing to talk about. Ella, so therefore, the fact that he sent them to Shmuel means, in other words, means therefore they must have changed, he must have changed his mind.
Maybe there was another reason.
Yeah, well, so that's the question. The El of my Hoderbe. So what are you going to tell me? So Rav definitely changed his mind. In that case, why is he sending them to Shmuel? Lisrinu. In that case, he should just ask them outright.
Okay.
No. So the answer is that wasn't the case. It's not necessarily that Rav changed his mind. What it is like this. El Asre de Shmuel. Haber. The answer is what it was is this story happened. Where Shmuel lived, where Shmuel was the Rav and Rosh Hashiva. So therefore, Rav has respect, right? So what it is the Rashi says, there's two possibilities. One possibility then we can say is it still shows that Rav changed his mind. However, now that Rav agrees with Shmuel that Sopha Jules says also, then If it was something they still disagreed on, fine, okay, I'm still entitled to my opinion. It may be in Shmuel's area. I'm still going to pass again that it's mutter. But from this story, Rashi says in his first lashon, we can prove that Rav changed his mind, as we just said.
So then, Rav,
why not? Rav and Shmuel are on an equal level. In fact, Rav is in a way, is in some sense greater than Shmuel.
Yeah.
He's more senior for one thing, yes.
But not in his area, not in Shmuel's
no,
area.
But even in Shmuel, even if he happens to be in Shmuel's area. So like this, Rashi explains like this. Again, Rashi has two explanations. Rashi's first explanation is like this. If Rav still continued to hold that these birds would be mutter, then he wouldn't have out of deference to Shmuel sent them to him, even though it's Shmuel's area, because it, why waste Jewish money? As we said the other day, I tried to call some money and show Yisrael. Given that in the event he changed his mind, so therefore he anyway agrees with Shmuel, and therefore there's no potential problem in him passing that is, there's nothing to be gained basically by him passing versus Shmuel, then he might as well show deference to Shmuel and send the question to him. That's one explanation. Then Rashi says another explanation is no. Rav did not change his mind, but even if we say that Rav didn't change his mind, he still might have felt that since I'm in Shmuel's area, it's not appropriate for me to be declaring it mutter when he himself holds it also. That's Rashi's second explanation. Okay. So two explanations. Do
so
we
there see? Is something about the second
fine, one. According to Rashi's second explanation, yes. Okay. Fine. So now the question
so
is,
in other words,
according to the first explanation in Rashi, we can prove from the story that Rav did change his mind. Otherwise, he still would have passed in on it. According to Rashi himself, you don't have any proof one way or the other from this, whether Rav changed his mind. Be that as it may, the halacha is like Shmuel anyway. Okay. So the question is, now, returning to Shmuel, so we said that, what did Shmuel do with these birds that were suffix drusa? We said he strangled them and threw them in the river. Now, why did he do that? Why do they have to strangle them? Let them just throw them into the river as they are. The answer is because they won't die from that, because they'll just fly away, and then other people may catch them, and they'll end up selling them to Jews, and Jews may end up not knowing that they're suffix traitors. No, but the point is that nevertheless, he was concerned about that possibility, that they might end up in Jewish hands. It's not so remote. No, it's in Babel, but still, it's in places where you have large numbers of Jews, so therefore it's a significant possibility.
Birds fly along.
Yeah, not that long. Not that long. Okay. What about the Lashinu Shnei Masa Chodesh? Okay, why not another possibility? Keep them for 12 months. We say later in the parak that if you have a case of an animal that suffers traitor,
right,
you keep it for 12 months and see what happens, because if it survives 12 months, you know that it's not traitor. The answer is also behold the data color. Yes, but the problem is that you may come to takala. You may come to forget and stumble over it. If it was one animal, fine, you can keep track of it. When you have a whole bunch of birds like this, you can't keep track of all of them. So somebody might end up shechting one of them and eating it without realizing. So what about another possibility? Why do you have to kill the birds? Why not sell them to goyim? And the answer is also was Avinu Yisrael, because they might resell them to Jews, and you have the same problem again. Okay, what about Velashan Kinu Velashadinu Ba'alashba? Okay, fine. So we established that Shmuel had no choice but to kill the birds. But why did he have to throw them in the river? Why not throw them into the garbage heap?
What's the difference?
Because that's the usual place where you throw garbage.
So the
point is, it seems from the story that he had a particular reason to throw them in the river. Why Dafka the river? Okay, so my answer is back. Well, the time after Mishadino Laklavim. Knew you could just as well ask why I didn't throw them to the dogs. Ella, no, the answer must be Lafarsumi Milsa de Isura. The reason why Dafka the river is because he wanted to publicize the matter. He wanted to publicize this kind of thing that people should realize that Suffolk Trefa is awesome. But that's why Dafka to the river. If he had just thrown it to the dogs or in the garbage or whatever, then it wouldn't make that kind of publicity. Now, Rashi asks another question. You have the concept of the dika. The Gemara is going to discuss that once, when you have an animal that's sopik drusa, or even vade drusa or whatever, you can check and see. So now, fine. Nowadays, we say we don't have the expertise for it. Many posts can say, but in Shmuel times they still had. So why didn't they do that? So Rashi explains there were small birds, and there's a lot of them, So therefore, he can't check all of them. He might end up, and in the course of checking, he might accidentally miss something in one of them, because you have a lot of them to check, and it's very easy to miss something. Or Rashi says another possibility is that this that we're saying, and Rashi prefers the second explanation, which is this that we're going to say, that the eres, that the poison or the toxin that we're talking about causes a reddening over there on the flesh, maybe that doesn't apply to a snake. Maybe it doesn't apply to a hawk. So in other words, a hawk is able to cause drusa, but you wouldn't necessarily see symptoms afterward that the victim had of the drusa. You would just eventually it would die from it within 12 months. So you wouldn't necessarily see an obvious symptom such as a reddening over there, unlike if it was attacked by a land animal, by a land predator. So therefore, that might be another reason why Shmuel couldn't do the bedik. It comes out according to that second explanation of Rashi, that even in a case not like this, even if you're talking about only one single bird that's a suffix drusa or not, then you wouldn't be able to by a hawk, then there's no bedikah. Even if we say we have the expertise in bedikah, we could say that the venom from a hawk is different than it is from lions and wolves and other such creatures. And therefore, we mean that always if you have a bird that was vadai or suffix attacked by a hawk, then it would be also.
So the hawk case is different.
The hawk case, of course, it actually might be different, yeah. Okay. Okay, fair enough. Okay, so here's a case. Hahu bar avza dehava bei Rav Ashi. There was a goose in the household of Rav Ashi. All lebeine kanya, this goose went in and wandered in among the reeds or bamboo or whatever. Nafak also, and then later on, it came out, and its neck was dripping blood. So the question is, what happened over there while it was in the swamp of reeds? Did it get attacked? It went in, Labene Kanya, among the reeds, Nafak also, and then it came out, and its neck was dripping blood. So it might have been, right, exactly. Omer Ravashi, Loy Amrinan Sofet Kal, Omer Ravashi, so Ravashi says like this, Loy Amrinan, didn't we say at the bottom of Omer Aleph, Sofet Kalba, Sofet Shunra, Ema Kalba, that when you have a doubt what kind of predatory animal went in there in the first place, whether it was a cat, whether it was a dog or a cat, Ema Kalba, we can assume, doesn't matter, teeth we said doesn't make drusa. So then we say that it was a dog and therefore there's no problem with drusa. Hochinami, so Ravashi says same thing over here. Sofik Kanya, Sofik Shunra. Yes, maybe it was attacked by a cat, but on the other hand, maybe it got injured by the reeds. Yeah. Therefore, Ema Kanya Machir. So therefore, you can assume that it was injured by the reeds, and not necessarily more likely. Even if it's a 50-50 chance, it's still mutter. There's no issue of trait. You would obviously have to check the simonim, as we learned in the second paragraph, to make sure that those weren't damaged, but in and of itself, you don't have an issue of drusa. Okay.